I have to be very open and honest with you, as always. We would have preferred, of course, an agreement, a unanimous agreement.
That's José Manuel Barroso, president of the European Commission, reacting to the partial result, partial agreement, but nevertheless an agreement at that EU summit in Brussels in the end. What have they gotten themselves into, these EU leaders? And perhaps it was that implicit tone of the European Economic Summit yesterday that made world markets the most nervous, a sense of the complexity, how to redraft treaties for 17 or 27 nations, how to make joint tax and fiscal policy stick, figuring out just who and what would police a new Eurozone standard for government spending, and most complex of all, figuring out where British Prime Minister David Cameron's head is at so the UK might be enticed into joining these reforms.
Of course, we want the Eurozone countries to come together and to solve their problems. But we should only allow that to happen inside the European Union treaties if there are proper protections for the single market and for other key British interests.
Cameron walked away from the agreement. He was explaining it there, suggesting it was too vague, unenforceable, and he objected to extending European financial regulations to London. He also wasn't keen on a proposed financial transaction tax. None of that pleased French President Nicolas Sarkozy.
David Cameron a demandé ce que nous avons considéré tous comme inacceptable.
David Cameron asked for something that we all thought was unacceptable. A protocol in the treaty that would allow the United Kingdom to be exempt from a certain number of regulations on financial services. We weren't able to accept that, because we consider, on the contrary, that a good part of the worries of the world comes from the deregulation of financial services.
But looking at the details of the arrangement, the Europeans have seemed to begin the process of enshrining a so-called two-speed Europe. That would recognize the vastly different financial powers among the 17 or even 27 relevant nations. Legally, it is a treaty within a treaty, which means there are questions about how much authority it will have, but approving it will be much easier than in a formal treaty rewrite, which means markets could get more immediate relief. The German Chancellor Angela Merkel acknowledged that the process has been difficult.
I believe that after long negotiations, this is a very, very important result, because we have learned from the past and from mistakes, and because in future there will be binding decisions, binding rules, more influence from the Commission, more community, and with that, higher coherence.
And even David Cameron of the UK admitted there was a lot of pushing and shoving, but in his case, when push came to shove...
It's not easy when you're in a room with many other people who all want to press ahead, who all say, forget about your safeguards, forget about your interests, let's all just sign up to this thing together. It's sometimes the right thing to say, I'm afraid I cannot do that.
And indeed, he did say that. He walked away from the deal. Joining us is Andrew Walker, economics correspondent for our partner, the BBC. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
So, first of all, the headline, of course, is the UK not agreeing to be a part of this. But what are the numbers in terms of the amounts of money that come out of this deal? Just give us a sense of that.
There are a few specific numbers. One is 200 billion euro, so something like, I suppose, $270 billion that they will contribute by way of loans to the International Monetary Fund to give it some increased resources to help deal with Eurozone governments that get into serious difficulty. But beyond that, you know, it was less about numbers and more about specific mechanisms for trying to ensure that whatever the Eurozone countries agree to do, they stick to those rules. I'll give you one or two, actually.
Sure.
A couple of numbers, actually, now on further reflection. For one thing, they're going to sign up to a rule that would require them to limit what's called their structural budget deficit, which is, if you like, the deficit the government budget would be in if the economy were performing normally, to just 0.5% of national income. That would be a pretty, you know, that's real discipline, a lot tougher than what they've agreed to so far. And most of them at the moment are a long way from achieving it.
And to tell us about, the UK walked away from the deal. Hungary has some questions about it, and there are apparently six nations that are taking a look as to whether they would actually join. Explain the different motivations there.
Well, six of the non-euro countries have agreed to sign up to it. They bear in mind that, with the exception of Britain and Denmark, countries are actually under a legal obligation to eventually join the euro. So clearly those six countries have taken the view that it makes sense for them to sign up, including, incidentally, Denmark, even though it's not obliged to join, but it's clearly keeping its options open. Then there are two countries, the Czech Republic and Sweden, that have concerns about whether they would get the consent of their parliament to signing up to this deal. So they are not definitively out of it. Then there is Britain, and the final one is Hungary, which has so far decided it's not going to sign up, although I've heard some rumours from diplomatic sources that they think that, well, maybe Hungary will eventually come round. But at this stage, they're sitting on the sidelines.
And this will be approved more easily because it's not a formal treaty. It's a treaty within a treaty, so it can happen more rapidly. How does that work?
Well, that's certainly one of the attractions of going down this route. There's still quite a lot of uncertainty about it, though, I have to say. I mean, there is the question of this agreement will, for the most part, I think, have to be approved by national parliaments. There is some doubt about whether it might actually need a referendum in some individual countries. And that, of course, does hold out the prospect of even more delay and, of course, the possibility of rejection if you do put it to a popular vote.
Finally, Andrew Walker, this two-tiered, two-speed Europe idea, is it roughly the case that the more beach property a nation has, the more likely it is to be in the slower speed?
Oh, that's an interesting way of putting it, isn't it? Who's got a lot of beach property? I suppose there's a fair amount of beach property in Britain, isn't there?
But
it's not the most attractive beach property. The really attractive beach property, of course, is in the Mediterranean, and that is on the inside of the two-speed Europe at the moment.
And how do they enforce the speeds, just in general?
Well, if the enforcement of the budget discipline, that ultimately is going to be something that the European Commission will have an important role in. It'll have some sort of sanctions. They haven't spelt out what they are, although in theory, under old rules, it did have the power to impose fines. So maybe that'll be the route they take.
And markets are reacting to all of that uncertainty. Andrew Walker, thanks so much. Economics correspondent for our partner, the BBC, from Brussels.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.